My name is Susan Ranz, and this is a continuing series on being everywhere and nowhere, lesbian and gay issues. And today's topic is egg caca as a... no. Actually, I have a bunch of stuff prepared that I was going to do today about political realities, sort of from an organizer's and political point of view. But it occurred to me, actually it was suggested to me last night, that maybe before I do that, or maybe even in lieu of doing that, I guess I'd just like to open the floor, just to start, right at the beginning, and just sort of ask folks, try to get a sense, is there something you would like to talk about? should we have a little question and answer session or just an open discussion at this point based on some of the things that we talked about last night or things that people maybe wondering about? And if there's not, then I can easily segue into what I was going to do, but I just wanted to leave that door open at this point in time. I don't know. See if there's anything anybody wants to say.
I'm sort of wondering how people felt about the session last night. I have some feelings about it, but I guess I'm looking to see if anyone else does.
I think it was pretty open. I don't know that maybe some of the people who still have lots of problems with it didn't say anything, I don't know, except for the one lady.
Well, there were a lot of people here who have problems with didn't come, I think.
Yeah.
She said too that there were a lot of people.
Oh, I'm sure.
Which is too bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you thought, Susan.
We haven't talked yet, so it'd be interesting to hear what you think.
I felt when I left that I almost wished it hadn't happened. That, and maybe it's because I'm more used to thinking about the issue, so I wasn't hearing new things. For people who were hearing new things to help them think, that was good. But I guess I just felt that mainly we talked past each other. Said a lot of stuff about scripture, but none of it in a very systematic way. So that you almost got the impression that you were citing for or against scripture, which I don't think was the case at all. I do feel bad for the one person who had the courage to consistently argue against Susan, mm-hmm. and the others who wanted to present a pro position. I think she shows how hard it is to be accepting of people that disagree with strongly. And I think that's an issue for both sides to consider. But on the whole, I just felt like I almost wished I hadn't come.
But in that kind of situation, it can't be done systematically. But maybe from that, from the hippie setup, that would be more.
You mean, when you say systematically, do you mean that a systematic analysis of the scripture kind of stuff, or?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, people talk about the scriptures
mm-hmm.
a lot, but I'm not sure that anyone talked particularly intelligently. Not stupidly either, I suppose, but I think when you appeal to scripture, that's actually a complex appeal, and that all of those complexities were reduced to, on the whole, vaguely throwing around references to passages,
yeah.
In many cases not even being able to specify passages. And I felt like people were good about presenting a position, but whether any position ever addressed another one, I'm not so sure actually did happen.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was the intent of the evening. That's mm-hmm. why I felt really good about it, that it was to allow people or encourage people, a variety of people, really to get their feelings public out and clarify it a little. I think none of Beck Yubis, I don't know if any of them were more equipped like that to deal with the scripture in a way that well, we deal with it like we always do. That's why we sort of have a feeling about the scripture and what it means, or we use it to bolster up some view we have.
I may just be coming out of, I've been working on a project, an academic project, analyzing Southern Baptist and Errantists and their view of women. And I've been virtually living at a hyper-fundamentalist Baptist seminary in Memphis. And I had just become acutely aware of what happens when two worldviews yell at each other, but never ever begin to share common terminology. Nothing ever, ever happens, and both views can be coherent, but nothing ever happens except the two worldviews yell at each other, and each becomes more entrenched. So I brought that sort of despair, I guess, to the meeting.
But I think that's probably, I don't know if anybody changed their views last night, or if we understood each other any better. But maybe people at least had a chance to say what they felt in public.
Yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
true. Mm-hmm. And so people shared very moving things.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought when Thor talked mm-hmm. in particular, that was really moving.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that's done for me in these sessions is to help me to realize that we all use God's creative, procreation tools, misuse them, abuse them, and therefore we are all sinful, and we all belong to one sinning community. And I would like to not hear us say that we are a lesbian and gay community over here, because we don't talk about we're a man and wife or husband and wife community over here. And the reason you say you're a lesbian and gay community is because we force you to band together over here in rejection. And we have to realize that we are all one in that sense. I mean, we can't say, I mean, if we're going to go to scripture and listen to what Jesus says about, even if you think about adultery, you are committing it, that doesn't give much room for some of us to get out of the sinning community. We're all in there. And the other thing that I got out
the
of
sinning.
Was, I think, when are we, well, we, when are we going to look at a man and a man, and a woman and a woman, and a man and a woman who really care about each other in those special groups, and stop trying to figure out how they are using God's procreative tools and any other tools in their spare time to have an orgasm, and they're spending all their spare time trying to do that. And when are we going to put agape up in the footlights and Eros back in the behind stage where it really belongs,
mm-hmm.
it seems to me. But we're always so concerned when we see two people together about what they're doing sexually that it just distorts our whole vision of a relationship.
That was the one thing that I wanted to say last night. I mean, generally, I didn't say anything because it was not my discussion. It was very hard for me to not say anything, but I really felt that it would have been inappropriate for me to say anything. But the one thing I wanted to say, and that didn't get said, that I wish would have, was exactly that what, and I would de-theologize what you just said in this way. The part of the reason that lesbians and gays refer to themselves as lesbians and gays and not homosexuals is because the word homosexuality, besides the fact that it was a clinical term, you know, comprised to talk about a disease, and now that disease has been decided and it no longer exists and has been stricken from the book, but that it puts so much emphasis on sex.
Mm-hmm.
and that I think that most people experience their sexuality as more than sex, you know, more than sexual acts, and that it's very singling out a particular group of people to sort of accuse them of being only focused on sex, and it's just not true. It's just not true, and it's that's why I appreciated what Brian said, that you know he wanted to talk about the bad things that happen in relationships, in lesbian and gay relationships, and in non-gay relationships, and how we can make things, you know, how we can use the gospel to make better relationships, and I was like, thank you, you know, but that was the one thing that I really wished someone would have said that or in some way could have been brought up that. We're not talking just about sex here, you know.
Well, but some people really think that's all you ever think about or ever do.
clearly, absolutely. I mean, there was
so much unemployment.
It's. Oh, Val, you're on a roll, kid. You're on a roll. Yeah, that's a real big one, and I wish that maybe Holden. Well, it seems to me like Holden should be a place where anything can be discussed, but that's one part. And actually, there was a forum supposedly on spirituality and sexuality the other night. I don't know what happened at it, but there that kind of limited definition of what sexuality means. And how people are in relation to each other is really, I just felt real confined by it while it was going on. I don't know. I interrupted you. I'm sorry, Lois.
No, that's all I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
Just in talking to people, that's all I ever hear them
say. Yeah, right.
Say.
You know, as I was. For those people who sort of just wandered in, before starting. I did have some stuff planned, but I did want to just open the floor to anything people wanted to say or ask or discuss with each other without, you know, being in the confines of a particular subject matter because of some of the stuff that happened last night.
I think one thing that was made more clear to me is the difference between your movement and our movement.
The AKKA movement?
Your issue and our issue. So.
Right.
In other words,
yes.
And there's a tendency to say, hey, we're all in this together, but we aren't. And we found out in the civil rights movement, between the difference between what the black community was doing and what the white community, and we certainly found out in the feminist movement, what the women had to do and what the men had to do, who were progressive on this. And I think there's a different, it's both the difference I want to understand more of our issues, but also how, in what way we join together.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps church is one place where that's possible. Well, certainly it's been the place it should be the place because it has
be.
The framework.
That's a big should be,
Of inclusiveness and so forth, but just like Sunday morning was the most segregated hour racially, and just like the church is one of the places where practices, male, female.
What do you mean by your movement and our
movement? Her issues, well, I've taken the gay and lesbian community is organizing. And I think the straight community has to begin organizing if we are going to be an open and inclusive community.
Organizing
churches to be open and inclusive,
or
organizing our schools, in other words, the blacks always said to whites who wanted to help out, go back and organize your own community.
Yeah.
You have the problem.
Oh, I see.
And I think it's our community that has the problem. We have a lot of organizing to do, and a lot of education and interpreting, and we can't expect Susan and the gay and lesbian community to do that education for us.
Mm-hmm.
So there's.
Mm-hmm. Which was, again, why I didn't say anything last night, because it really was not my discussion. I was present at it, but it was not my discussion. It was your discussion, or your discussion, the discussion of the people you just described.
How did you have a vision of what was going to happen last night? Did it sort of follow that pattern, or were you surprised? What were some of your feelings as you listened?
The overwhelming feeling that I had was physically I felt very nervous, precisely because it's very hard for me to be in a situation where people are talking about things about which I have very, very, very strong opinions and not say anything. So that it was just physically I was like pent up. But in response, I sort of had a sense of what would be discussed last night, and in fact, the week all before I came here, I really worried about how this discussion would take place, because as I said, it's not my discussion, and I was worried that I was going to have to in some way lead it, and Ingrid and Jody really helped by just saying no, we'll put this in a community forum, and Ingrid took it over. So that was very comforting to me, because I wasn't sure that I could or should have led that discussion. So I'd given it a lot of thought. And mostly throughout the whole thing, I was very much, I think I used the phrase, in love with the process that was going on in the room. I felt that people were trying very hard, and sometimes in very measured tones, to make themselves heard and to say precisely what they meant and not just throw ideas out there, but very carefully say what they were going to say. And there, God knows I expected, in fact, I expected more of the kinds of sort of biblically based condemnation than I heard. And so I was sort of ready for that. And at one point, right at the beginning, I think it was wonderful that Elmer said what he said when he said it. Mm-hmm. And for about 30 seconds, though, after he said it, I wanted to answer him by saying, okay, that's fine, but I also then want to charge everyone in this room to the responsibility that it's fine here at Holden to say, yes, we'll entertain this thought, this diversity of opinion on this, and let's openly listen to each other. But I also wanted to remind the room that out there in the world that's not Holden, that attitude, that particular attitude, is what is used by people with power, money, and control in this society to justify oppression. And so let us not kid ourselves that by sort of sitting in a room and all of us listening deeply to each other and trying to touch each other's realities, that we have now come to peace with this issue. You know, for me, getting on the bus and going back out and going back home to Chicago, I will feel good that I was somewhere on the planet where this kind of measured and very loving discussion was held, but it doesn't mean much in terms of what I do next, you know. And I wanted to say that, and then I realized, no, I would be responding to Elmer as if he were talking to me, and he wasn't talking to me. Mm-hmm. And so I had to keep dissociating. It was sort of a strange feeling, because I felt like I was in a room where people were all talking about me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but I knew they weren't talking about me, you know. But then I was there, you know, and I at one point I wished that I could have been in
mouse.
Another room with the headphones on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that I could have listened very intently, but I could have emoted. I could have gone, what? You know? Or, oh, that's good, you know. But instead, I had to just sit. So it was a very strange feeling.
So why did you say that Elmer wasn't talking to you?
Because of my self the position that I take that it's not my discussion.
Oh.
And then also that it was, I felt that that was a charge from Elmer to the whole room, to just be, just wait, everybody take one deep breath, and now start talking again, you know? And so that it wasn't, I didn't take it as Elmer saying to me, hey, now wait a minute, Susan, you have to listen to these people, you know? He was, and that was the chair.
Susan, would you say then that that is one more, that would be that case that you just said you have to walk the line and deal?
Yeah.
That would be another case of legislating someone's interpretation of morality into the civil sphere.
Absolutely. I really think that that's the, that was just the one, you know, the one reality that I really wanted to get on it, and Jody was the one who finally said it in only the wonderful way that Jody can say those things. Jody, that, you know, finally said, you know, okay, let's talk secular here for a minute. You know, that it's fine to disagree and spiritually struggle with the meaning of these words on this page that some folks feel are divinely inspired and some folks feel are temporally inspired, and but there's another reality, and the reality is that that attitude is used by people with power and money and control in this society to exercise oppression against a group of people, and that's that's my reality. Mm-hmm. That's my reality. So that, you know, I think the reality of a lot of lesbian and gay people. A lot of lesbian and gay people are very, very deeply suspicious of the church. Deeply suspicious, and some to the point of being very, very, very angry. And have no patience for a discussion like the one that took place in this room last night. And those lesbians and gays who feel that they need to continue being church-related people, you know, and not just say, okay, church, take yourself and, you know, I don't ever want to be involved with you again, which most of us do. There are people who are struggling very hard within their churches, and those people are, you know, express a frustration that's even more intense because it's such a slow, agonizing process, like John described.
Now, why in this world is there a need to even categorize or label people based on their sexual orientation? It's like separating the vegetarians from the... I mean, why? Why do we have to wear that... anybody have to wear a label?
Because we do it all the time. Yes. I have a friend who says... who's a nurse. He says, don't call me a male nurse. You don't call somebody a female nurse. You don't call somebody a male secretary. But we do it. That's just part of
it. But it's obvious that they are male. I mean, that is sort of something you see.
It's
you can't see anybody being a lesbian or gay. So why? I mean, like, you can't see them walking down the street and say, oh, he's a vegetarian. So why the label? Why do we have to go by...
Well, I mean, there's a certain level of invisibility, but then there's also a certain level of visibility unless you try to make yourself invisible. For example, I cannot walk down the street with my arm around my lover unless I'm in a really strong mood that day, because you just the very act of doing it is like you just don't want to do it. You can't get a block without something happening, you know. So that there's, you know, it's not that invisible, but I hear what you're saying.
Well, also, it's just kind of good to know more about that person. It just tells me something about that person. I really see it as having a negative connotation. It just, you know, it will help me to relate to that person in a better way, just because I know more about them. And, you know, it's really helpful for me to know who the vegetarians are so I can cook food for them. You know, it's be really helpful for me to know that Susan is a lesbian, so, you know, maybe there would be a man that come would be interested in Susan. I could say, you know, well, I don't think this will work out. So, you know, I think those kind of labels are good. There are a lot of silly ones. Mm-hmm. Like the questions to, there was a question to the quarterback that was the first black quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Doug
and someone asked him, well, how long have you been a black athlete? So it's really stupid, but you know, some of it is really necessary. And you know, I kind of struggle with that with dealing with disabled people, mentally ill people. You hate to label them, but it really helps to deal with them.
Well, this labeling would be so bad if we didn't separate them then.
Yeah.
Basically, you're saying it's not the labeling, it's the oppression.
Yeah. The oppression and then
the oppression because of the labels.
I don't think that any out lesbian or gay feels, you know, uncomfortable with being known, being seen as lesbian and gay, and if this were the best of all possible worlds, you know, but it's not. So that fact of being known and being honest and being out is means you're taking on the rest of the stuff when it happens, and it's not. I think in terms of the church, and you asked that question right when we were finished talking about the church. I'm not so sure how much it has to do with the church. I don't know why you would have to be. Was there separate pews that you sit in or something? You know, I mean, it's just like there's, you know, I mean, no churches call themselves integrated or segregated churches, right? Right now.
Yeah.
Out there, you know,
still now.
We have one in Memphis that's known as the discriminating congregation.
Wow. That just means they watch Masterpiece Theater instead of Love Boat, right? That's what that means, right?
Sometimes that's more serious than that. In Idaho, in northern Idaho, there's a white supremacist community, and they are very vocal about their views.
Mm-hmm.
And they are also very political in their activities,
mm-hmm.
directed toward Jews and blacks.
That's right.
So, you know, it's not that funny.
Yeah.
Really.
No,
and when they do it in the name of Christianity, it is really scary.
Oh, sure. The what do they call themselves? The
Aryan Nation.
I thought it was also the cross, the sword, and the name of Jesus or something like that, covenant and all that kind of stuff. Uses all these biblical references.
Right.
Yeah.
The South African Dutch Reformed Church is a state church.
Same
thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the church sometimes enforces a ghetto mentality on gay communities and RIS sub-communities, not just gay communities, but all is. I'm looking from the Catholic perspective, where Hispanics have banded together in sort of subculture parishes. It's more prevalent, perhaps even in obviously in Chicago, the ethnic divisions in the Catholic Church. But out here, it takes a more a less formal approach. But the Vietnamese Mass, and then along in that category comes dignity, and the internal politics of the Archdiocese is such that. There's a desire to have the Dignity Mass included in a parish as part of a parish that is recognized in mm-hmm. the gay neighborhoods of Seattle. And, you know, I have friends who are involved in the Dignity movement in Seattle, and the Dignity group is really split over whether it should identify with St. Joseph Parish, which protects it in its weekly Mass, being a Jesuit parish and all that, and they have a really interesting relationship with the parish itself, but it's not. And whether or not that Mass should be a regular part of St. Joseph Parish or whether it is Dignity Parish.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the church enforces a kind of a ghetto mentality on that, on one hand, by segregating that group and that function into a special 3 o'clock in the Sunday afternoon experience. And whether or not it might be more helpful, and in fact that's the direction the Archdiocese wants to take, is to include Dignity as a regular experience of St. Joseph Parish.
Mm-hmm.
And but there are people within Dignity who are resisting that because then it becomes they maintain their own ghetto mentality
mm-hmm.
about it. And it has split the Dignity community quite clearly. So there are some gay Christians who really want to maintain themselves as a cell and a subculture, and then there are some that want to present themselves in the larger community. And that's a real dilemma. I don't know.
Well, it's exactly the same thing is happening in Chicago, that only it's a little bit more heavy-handed in that the Archdiocese has said
that
dignity must come under the administration of the Archdiocese.
Uh-huh.
And the dignity folks, justifiably, I mean, now, you know, part of the reason that I have this little problem with all of the kind of discussion that went on in here last night is I come from a Roman Catholic background, and we're looking at the Roman Catholic Church here, who is in their 1986 letter on the issue of lesbians and gays, stopped just short of saying it's okay to inflict violence. I mean, to be violent toward lesbians and gays. You know, stopped just short of it. I mean, it just said it could, I think the line was, we can understand why some people would be moved to violence. You know, so I'm a little about this stuff. But anyway, dignity in Chicago, therefore, is a little suspicious of saying, oh, okay, sure, we will relinquish our autonomy to the Archdiocese because, you know, I mean, at any minute the Archdiocese could then say, well, okay, now dignity can't have masses anymore. Boom. You know, and so dignity is thinking about moving its masses to a Unitarian church.
Lutheran church. In fact, ironically enough, Resurrection.
Is it Resurrection?
Yeah.
yay for Resurrection. That's right.
Do people know what dignity is?
No. Oh, dignity is the Roman Catholic, every denomination and religion, you know, of course, has a subgrouping in it. Lutherans is Lutherans Concerned. In Roman Catholics is dignity.
What's the United Church?
United Church.
Open and Affirming Church.
Open and Affirming Church.
Well, where does the Metropolitan Church fit in there?
So, you know, it's real interesting. I wanted to talk to, before I left, I have a friend that I went to divinity school with who is a black lesbian ordained Baptist minister. or a Northern Baptist minister, okay? and she was, you know, she went to the divinity school at U of C and got her DMin at U of C, which is a Baptist school, so she was Baptist, ordained as a Baptist. And she currently is the pastor of the MCC Church in Evanston. And I wanted to get together with Emily. She's always sort of amazed me. I just would say to her, you are a walking bundle of contradictions. How can you encompass all your contradictions in yourself? It's amazing. But she, MCC is, of course, the National Council of Churches won't, every year the proposal comes up to incorporate it, and every year it gets rejected. But MCC is founded by a guy named Troy Perry, Reverend Troy Perry, and has all the trappings of, including a theology and a liturgy of a denomination. I don't know the theology. I think it's pretty, pretty conservative theologically, and sort of you know, extremely low church. Really is not a
sort of fundamental.
MCC doesn't.
In Seattle, actually, they're more like mainline Methodists. They use the Methodist Church and Capitol.
Right.
And there has been a split. And the fundamentalists have moved now to Ballard and have taken over the old Ukrainian Baptist Church, where they have very evangelical and revivalistic charismatic kind of
right.
So there are two groups in Seattle.
And Emily is not, doesn't really affiliate herself as an MCC person. I don't know. I don't know how it works with Protestants, you know. But she was asked to help start this parish. And MCC it functions that way. It functions as a denomination. They have a liturgical stance and the whole thing. And it's not ecumenical. I mean, it's got a line. But it does, what I wanted to get from Emily is the MCC has these handouts with the MCC interpretation of the 6 or 12 or how many Bible passages, and I wanted to get them from her. But I don't know enough about MCC except to know that that's one option. I mean, that's a very, I'm not surprised that it's there.
What does it stand for?
Metropolitan Community Church.
My recollection is
that Troy came out of the UCC.
And I think he did.
Which would say, to me at any rate, that it's not a very fundamentalistic organization. And in terms of the interpretation of those biblical passages, mm-hmm. to say that they would be fundamentalistic on the one hand, and then to say that they would have their particular interpretation on the other hand is sort of a contradiction in terms.
Yeah.
It would seem that their theology would be more in keeping with the UCC than anything else, which, again, by definition, does not have much doctrinal stance,
mm-hmm.
historically, anyway.
Yeah.
Which allows then for a lot of freedom of expression and freedom of interpretation.
Mm-hmm. I really honestly don't know. Though I have heard theologically they fall on not necessarily fundamentalist, but sort of conservative. Extremely, like, sort of Methodist, low church kind of thing.
Yeah, that's not, I think, the generic sense of conservative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what terms to use.
Which is the problem, obviously, with labels. Again.
Yeah, right, exactly. But I think it's more interesting as a phenomenon.
Okay. But what I think about it is, of course, the UCC historically has been congregationally oriented in terms of its polity,
mm-hmm.
which allows for a group like that to establish a primarily congregationally based polity,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and doesn't get hung up in terms of hierarchical structure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I'm acquainted with a number of gay people and friends who have come out of very strong Lutheran backgrounds, gone to Lutheran colleges and, you know, even divinity schools and come close to ordination and have spent a number of years in their 20s bloodying themselves trying to organize within the traditions of their families and the traditions of their backgrounds, mm-hmm. and have basically been rejected by them. And for the interest of their own mental health, and have just, you know, okay, I can't do this anymore. And I think that is the responsibility when you throw it back. It is the responsibility of the mainline people. It is the responsibility of the heterosexual dominant factors of the church to be aware of that. That by that rejection and by that indifference even, that you are causing hurt and harm for their own offspring and their own children. And it's been an interesting experience I've had watching and living close to a number of friends in that experience. And now at middle age, having spiritual reawakenings and understandings of mortality and trying to fit themselves back in sort of by the back door in the back pew again,
mm-hmm.
Running the risks all over again. It's a strange thing.
The current stand of the ELCA, of course, is ordination if you promise to be celibate. And as long as you remain celibate, you are okay.
Yeah, but they wouldn't do that to a heterosexual.
Sort of what you were saying, the fear, last night about models for children and models as leaders, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know, how do you feel about that, about model as a leader in if you were the minister of a church in a relationship?
Well,
as a gay,
okay.
Or 50 years from now, the president of the United States as a gay man or lesbian and in a relationship and going off to Russia, not with Nancy, but with my, you know, my lover who is. And, you know, can we picture that?
Well, Sherry will leap out of her chair here. And then, what did you
nice,
say?
Nice option to dance. Yeah, anything
but dancing.
Okay, yeah, I have some strong feelings on that because I know one of the men that was up for ordination, Jim Lancaster, and mm-hmm. he would be a great pastor. I think we're really screwing up. I think it'd be really important and good for the church if we did ordain these men. These would serve as good role models for the young men or, you know, gay men and lesbians in the church. There's not a lot of good role models out there for these people. So I think that would be very good. And also I think that, you know, they should be allowed to express their sexuality and to have a significant other, just so that they can have good support the last night I was home, I went out with a group of people, and there was a couple that went out with us that I hadn't seen for about 6 months. And it was two men, and they were doctors. And it turns out that they had recently bought a house, and they got another roommate to help with the house payments. And right after they decided to do this, it turns out that the new roommate had AIDS. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they talked about it, you know, do we still want him to have him as a housemate? If we do that, we're going to have to let him die in our house. So they offered that to the man. And he said, yes, they weren't really expecting that. And so they took that on, and they cared for him in their home pretty much right up to the very end. And this man didn't tell his parents until 3 weeks before he died. And it was a very hard time for them. And I don't think they could have done it if they didn't have the support of each other.
Yeah, well, I think one of the stances, the common, what happens now is that there are gay pastors,
yeah,
and there are lesbian pastors, and but it's just have to be very quiet and very discreet, and leaving themselves open to blackmail and lacking of promotion, and oftentimes very capable people, but who are living in having just to dodge the oblique questions. And And I think that's always been the case, actually. And I, you know, especially in the Roman Catholic tradition,
yep.
You know, it's an in-house joke.
It sure is. It sure is.
But the thing is that you can't, you know, it's like the emperor has no clothes. You can't say it.
Mm-hmm.
And by openly admitting the fact that this exists, even, I must admit, I am pretty surprised that the AELC is rejecting these guys, because it's been ordaining gay people for, you know, generations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see something at this point, and that is, we did touch on this issue in our Bible study garden this morning,
mm-hmm.
and in the slowness of change, and that was alluded to last night. It takes time for change. Last night's meeting made its impact, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it may not be reflected overtly when they go back right now. To many people, it's the first time they've ever been in a forum with such emotional issues before them that have to be faced, because it's going to affect the way they relate in society. Whether it was spoken, or whether you could speak eloquently or not, on the issues, or intelligently enough on the issues, was really just like the point in my judgment.
Mm-hmm.
The issues were addressed in our finite ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not that way. As human beings, we have our limitations.
Mm-hmm.
I empathize with you in your pain. I felt with you alone in your seat last night. I know the oppression of the church in other ways,
yes,
than just your issue,
mm-hmm.
and in many ways it's very unjust and very unfair, and I wonder sometimes, I know, they don't know who they are,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and I hope I'm beginning to find who I am. to your issue, I want to say that my husband and I followed a pastor who had been gay in the congregation. We lived in the community 10 years, and we picked up pieces until even just the very week we left, we were picking up pieces, and they were painful pieces. Where does responsibility to others come in? I sat here thinking that last night. It's fine line.
Was it painful because you felt like he was being deceptive?
It was painful to the families involved because their children had been approached.
I'm not talking
that's
about
her. Yeah,
well,
I mean,
she's
talking.
I am talking about
And
it wasn't just a few, it was many, because that was the social setting and the geographic area in which we lived. It was a situation that could happen. And it still is confusing to the members of that congregation. now, many years later, and will follow them into the end of their days, I'm sure.
But that same thing happens with heterosexuals.
Yeah, I just want to ask a question.
Says, don't let men be pastors.
Where is our responsibility to each other?
Yeah.
And I ask it for myself.
Yeah. But I think in that case, but we're always ready to say this is what homosexual or gay guys do, and you know, heterosexual do the same thing.
Overwhelming percentage of sexual
But it's not made a public issue.
Oh boy. Well, the Archbishop wrote a letter to all the parishes of the Archdiocese 2 weeks ago referring to the issue of priestly pedophilia, and they were read at all masses. And yeah.
In
Seattle.
Oh, that's because you have high college.
Oh, well, I mean, it was the stunned silence.
You have Catholic Mecca over there.
Taking the oxygen out of the room.
Move to Seattle
and
be a Catholic.
I could empathize with this lady in the back of the room there. Whether we agree with her or not, I felt the whole room and the spirit of the room.
Oh, in the past, the guy who did it grew up in my parish, and his family's still there.
We're all limited by what we've inputted. Those of us who have had opportunities to broaden our spectrum, and especially I envy the young today who had those opportunities to learn of themselves in psychological ways that my generation even didn't get. Mm-hmm. And so, is that what it's all about? Separation and. And we get back to the garden again.
I think there's still a lot to learn. I mean, we talk about this, but we don't know a lot of facts about why people are as they are. Mm-hmm. We don't know the chemistry of what causes us to be different in this way.
Yeah. But I don't know that that's important.
Well, I think it's important because, in one sense, that it would eliminate a lot of anxiety. I mean, it was important to find out that alcoholism is something that we can work with and live with and do something with. And it's important to find out that child abuse is something that we can work with and hopefully, even though it seems like it goes from one generation to the next, hopefully we're not stuck there and that a child's abuse is going to raise abused children and so forth and so on. We're working with that, and I think we need to work with this and with one another and with all the things we do wrong heterosexually. We need to come to terms with why we do that more. And I think just the fact that we can talk about all this stuff is incredible compared to what it was like when I was growing up. And that's a liberation starting to come out, and maybe we'll learn how to handle all this better.
Because they have a right to their space too.
Well, sure, absolutely.
Well, yeah, with the one important caveat that I really believe, at least from my perspective, that yes, everyone has a right to their own space and a right to disagree. But when one party in the disagreement has the money, the power, and the social sanction to be able to oppress the other party in the disagreement, then they don't have a right. Then it is incumbent on all of us to say no. No.
I was glad you brought that right at the conclusion.
No.
Because that summed it all up concretely.
There's really no reason why Christians on all sides of this issue, it seems to me, can't in fact be leaders in the society for a civil spirit and practice of tolerance on these issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no reason why people who think like Valley and Fern do. Mm-hmm. It seems to me not to be leaders in their community for gay civil rights. Mm-hmm. There's no contradiction, it seems to me, between taking the position that they do and doing that in the public life.
In fact, it's better for us who perhaps are in the power group, Susan, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. to do that as Christians because of vested interest. So, you know, if you are something, mm-hmm. I went through this with the women's issue in the Episcopal mm-hmm. Church. Yeah. See, if you are something, I'm a woman, okay? I was a lay reader in the church, which is, I don't know what it's equivalent to in the Lutheran church, but, okay, lay reader.
And we don't have lay leaders in Catholic churches. So. Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, well, see, that's why I'm not practicing.
But if you are one, it is very difficult to place your position before the power group with any sense that it's not going to be rejected out of hand.
Absolutely.
So it is upon, it really comes upon the others, the people who are either outside the issue or in the position of power, to take on that as a responsibility, at least in the secular view, in the civil rights view.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think there is hope, just because if you look at the fact that blacks don't have to bend lower than whites to drink out of the fountain, or they don't have to go to the back of the bus now, and that we do have a man who's running for, who was running for president, who was a black. I mean, even though there are lots of other subversive things about the way we treat blacks that have emerged, and instead of drinking in the fountain, at least hopefully. We're moving in a good direction, and I think as soon as we begin to air this and know more about homosexuality or whatever you want to say, you'll begin to grow with it and make room.
But we've slid so far backwards with the black in the last 10 years. That's all sickening.
Well, there is backwards.
Backwards is a cutting edge. You know, part of it on the cutting edge, it has to be part of its style. And part of it, on the cutting edge, you have militancy. It has to be there. And if you have militancy, you have, you know, the other wall hitting it. I recall, usually we were ordaining women. There are first women that, we got our first woman pastor in our parish in the ALC. And she was militant. She had to be. And they aren't now. I mean, it's a mellowing now. There is hope.
Another question I just thought of in our area, which is just south of San Francisco. In San Francisco, there was this big deal about gay Olympics.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm sitting here in my naive way saying, gays are not excluded from the regular Olympics. So what's the big deal? I mean, it's not like you're gay so you can't compete in the regular ones. Can you shed...
Oh, well, but that's a, I mean, the gay Olympics, I don't know what the local color about it in San Francisco is, but I do know that one of the things about the gay Olympics is that, see, and it's something I started to talk about a little bit yesterday, that prior to the gay liberation movement, prior to Stonewall, the really only places where gay and lesbian people could be with each other and feel safe were in bars, okay? And so, and then, you know, as everyone in the country became more and more aware of you know, alcohol dependency and issues like that, so did the gay community. A community that was sort of, its community life had to be, up until a certain point, had to be carried out in drinking establishments. So there became a strong movement in the gay community to make alternatives and in fact replace bar life with athletics. And so there are organized gay athletic unions and gay athletic at the Metropolitan Sports Association in Chicago is like hundreds of baseball teams and, you know, bowling leagues and blah blah blah. And so it's a nationwide movement, and I think that the push for the gay Olympics is more a celebration of that, of the fact that there are gay, healthy gay athletes all over this country who are good at what they do, and they want to compete against each other. They want to have an Olympics for gay people. I don't think it's that, oh, we can't compete in the regular Olympics, or we're kicked out of the regular Olympics. That's not the issue. The issue is a celebration of this sort of event, that of this healthy thing that's happening in the gay community. And I know many people who are real into organizing that kind of gay athletic stuff in Chicago.
But that's promoting a segregated society.
Well, there's, I mean, it, you know, it's the model here, the operative model, has got to be the issue of race and white folks and black folks. So, you know, there is a need to when one is discovering and claiming oneself and feeling proud in oneself and sort of forming one's own culture and celebrating one's own culture, to be with people like yourself. I mean, there are situations in which it's absolutely inappropriate for white people to be at a black event, you know, or in a certain context. I mean, that's not segregating. That's saying. We as gay people have reclaimed our ability to be able to go play sports together, and you know, and take away the implications of the locker room and you know all that kind of stuff, and really go out there and train, and we want to do it together. I mean, that's a celebration. That's not a segregation. I mean, there's two sides to that coin, I think. I don't know if I said that right, but that's...
But I wonder if the world doesn't look at it as segregation in the same way that if black people got together and had, you know, special black Olympics or something.
Because well, there are such things.
I mean, sure. I think that the distinction here is between a kind of celebrative pluralism, mm-hmm. right,
yeah.
which is a positive thing. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me, the one thing that the United States of America has to give the world. It's not technology, it's not our economic system, it ain't our politics, but it is this sort of, this incredible pluralism, and hopefully our struggle to celebrate it, right?
Yes.
That's what we've got.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we've got.
Mm-hmm.
To distinguish between that and forced, oppressive segregation,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And forced, oppressive separation,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
If gays are forced into bars, because that's the only place they can go, that's not celebrative pluralism,
right?
If blacks are forced into certain neighborhoods because that's the only place they can go, that's not celebrative pluralism. But how do we move from
the
oppressive
segregation?
Yeah,
so
it's exactly celebrating your culture.
Well,
that's why you have Norwegian Day.
Women camp.
You know,
women's camp at a church camp. You have a weekend or a week where only women come. Because then women get a chance to just be with each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's not segregating. It's celebrating, definitely.
And is the objection to their using the term Olympics, since there is that heritage of the Olympics? Is that the issue then?
Yeah, that was the issue.
That the fact they're using
Olympics.
Oh, yes, they're using word. That's it.
Yeah.
That they're using that word.
But
the Olympics.
No one complains about
it's patented.
The Olympics or
Special Olympics.
Special Olympics,
yeah.
Olympics, yeah. You know.
Well, that's a matter. Well, that's different. That's because of the competition. They can't compete. Special Olympics people can't compete in
the Olympics
because they're physically handicapped.
But that's
a whole different notion.
But it's not meant to be the real Olympics. I don't think Special Olympics is meant to be an alternative to the regular. It's a celebration same thing with gay people.
No, gays can be in the regular Olympics. They could be in the special too, depending on their physical.
Right, but they're. There,
and there probably are lots in it.
You bet.
So, you know.
And so let's all go to the Olympics.
Yeah, but what's the big deal
yeah.
that they have to call this other thing?
Well, who knows the name? It's more the name just describes a big event where people compete.
Yeah.
I mean, the Olympics that happens every 4 years doesn't own that name.
They think they do. Oh, yes, they do.
But I think the word connotes more than that.
Yeah.
In the same way that, how come you can have a World Series of golf? You know, everybody knows that the World Series is baseball.
Yeah,
the
World Series.
World's
Fair?
Series.
How many World's Fairs?
Are they right? You know, what? Whose world? You know, I really am glad. I mean, what time is it on there? We're probably run over time. I'm really glad that I blew off what I was going to say, though I really think at some point in time we need to talk, we need to stop talking about what we're talking about and really do sit and talk politics, talk about what happens in the real world and how you do organize. And that was what I did have in here, and maybe sometime in the next 3 or 4 days we will get to it, but I just really wanted to make a space after last night's making of space to respond to last night's making of space, and I really appreciate all of you just taking a ball and going with it, so to speak, in the Olympics, in the holding Olympics. So thanks an awful lot, and I also just want to sort of personally thank you all for being so open and supportive.